This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A Courier-Journal investigation found dozens of Kentucky middle and high school coaches have been investigated for alleged child sexual misconduct over the past 15 years. The report found predators thrive on silence, secrets, and a refusal to acknowledge warning signs by lawmakers, school administrators, and even entire communities. Joining me now to talk about how this abuse persists and why state legislation has stalled are Enterprise and Investigations reporter for the Courier-Journal, Stephanie Kuzadim. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Hi, Lucy. Thank you.
And Thomas Law Office's managing partner, Tad Thomas. Welcome back, Tad, or not welcome for the first time, Tad. Feels like I've known
first
you forever,
time.
But this is your first time on the program. Thank you.
Thanks,
Stephanie, Lee. Tell us briefly where this investigation began in your newsroom. Did it start with these two kind of side-by-side headlines?
It absolutely did. It happened on a day in July in 2023 when I was going between two editors who were asking me about two completely different coaches who were in court the exact same day. And I kept saying, okay, every time you ask me a question, you need to start with in regards to so-and-so's case and in regards to so-and-so's case, so we don't get any details mixed up. And then we realized that they were facing the same three charges. So we had back-to-back headlines related to two local coaches with child sex abuse related charges. And one of the editors said, man, let's hope this never happens again. And then that just begged the question, well, how often is it happening?
What did you find? How often is this happening? How many cases did you uncover of this kind of abuse in Kentucky?
So at least 80 cases of alleged child sexual misconduct, which ranges from everything to text messages, inappropriate text messages, all the way up to rape, and between by Kentucky middle and high school coaches. And we focused on that because we did find some related to like club coaches as well. But there's not a whole lot of accountability measures once you get outside of high schools that you can implement. And we say at least because I think there's probably more, but I was searching through old headlines and the further back I got, the harder it was to find some of those headlines. But in recent years, there have been, so it's been as little as two and as many as 11. And when you got to more recent years, that's when I was finding even more cases. So I don't know if it's more prevalent or just those headlines still existed on the internet. So,
yeah. Tad, I know you've represented survivors of this type of abuse. Are there factors that create more of an opportunity for this kind of abuse when it comes to coaches and athletes?
You know, there are, and it's the close proximity in which coaches work with athletes, as opposed to just like a teacher-student relationship. Athletes, oftentimes youth athletes, see their coaches as parental figures, you know, more so than a teacher per se. So that bond and that close relationship that they have, that trust, it creates a more of an atmosphere for at-risk youth to, you know, fall prey to this type of coach. And then, you know, couple that with just opportunity, the amount of hours that athletes spend with coaches outside of the presence of their parents, you know, early morning swim practices, late in the night cheer practices, you know, these all provide opportunities for coaches who, you know, are prone to this to have opportunities with this type of victim.
We're talking about a Courier-Journal investigation into alleged child sexual abuse by Kentucky coaches. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Stephanie, I want to talk to you because we're going to get into some of the details of your investigations, but when you dug through all these old newspaper clippings, all these cases to try to find this data, what was the response that you heard from school districts? I know you tried to contact school districts about these cases. You tried to talk to the people who were accused and their lawyers. What kind of response did you get from them?
Not a whole lot of public response. Mostly, I received personnel files from those school districts. So, and then we used the state's open records law to also request things like settlements related to some of those. And I only knew to ask for some of them that I didn't eventually get because I was tipped to some of them. So that is where that kind of whole silence and secrets things came from. My editor and I kept discussing, like, man, if you don't know, if you didn't see this headline, like there's no way of really knowing that this may have happened. So it's not something that almost anybody wanted to talk with me about. I only had one source in the beginning who was willing in a school district to say, yeah, let's talk about how this kind of works. Most of them just said, like, well, that's not happening here. So kind of move along.
Yeah. You know, Ted, Stephanie just mentioned settlements, and settlements can come as the result of lawsuits. Talk with us about the role that lawsuits can play in these cases in terms of holding coaches and school districts accountable.
You know, it's an incredibly important factor in my mind. And, you know, and that's all I do is, you know, civil cases. And a lot of times law enforcement either can't or won't, for one reason or another, pursue these cases. You know, in law enforcement and in criminal prosecution, they have a higher burden of proof. Sometimes they're very difficult cases for the prosecution to make. With the civil standard and our ability to do discovery and take depositions and subpoena records, sometimes the civil process is a better tool for pursuing wrongdoers in a lot of instances. And it's important to make sure that victims have, you know, one, going through this process is a cathartic effect. You know, a lot of them, once they come to grips with what happened to them and they want to pursue this process, following through in the process is good for them to get past that trauma. But more importantly, is compensating them. They're, you know, a lot of these victims have lifelong problems that require psychological treatment, counseling, psychiatrists, medication. And if it's not for the civil process to make sure that these victims get taken care of, they end up falling on the public dollar. And so it's important for us to make sure that the wrongdoers are the ones that are paying to make sure that these victims are cared for.
And Stephanie, how long can it take for a survivor of child sexual abuse to speak up about what happened to them?
Well, from all the child advocates and social scientists that we spoke with, it's decades. So most of them are not coming forward within months or a couple years. It's taking until they're in their 50s and 60s. Tad actually knows probably a lot more about it than I do. But yeah, from what we were told, it's decades.
Is that what you find, Tad, with your clients?
Absolutely. And, you know, the studies show that the average age for a child victim to come forward about their abuse is actually in their 50s. And that's one of the problems with, you know, current statutes in both Ohio and Kentucky, as far as when the statute of limitations runs. It takes a long, long time for victims to, you know, come forward.
We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about a Courier Journal investigation into alleged child sexual abuse by Kentucky middle school and high school coaches. My guests are Enterprise and Investigations reporter for the Courier Journal, Stephanie Kuzadim, and Thomas Law Office's managing partner, Tad Thomas. Tad, we were talking about before the break about the statute of limitations in these kinds of cases. You've argued before the Kentucky Supreme Court about how these cases work and don't work. What impact have the court's rulings had on these cases?
Unfortunately, it's been adverse to victims. In the case that I argued last year in front of the Kentucky Supreme Court, they interpreted some changes that the legislature made to the statute of limitations, which would have opened up the ability to recover for many, many victims. And the Supreme Court essentially closed that door that the General Assembly created by saying that if the statute of limitations had already passed under older law, that the new law could not be used to expand that to protect those victims. So I was really disappointed in the ruling. I would have hoped that the Supreme Court would have taken more seriously the pervasive issue that child sex abuse has in Kentucky. It's one of the highest, Kentucky's one of the worst states when it comes to child sex abuse. And they had an opportunity to work with the General Assembly to address that, and they chose not to.
Stephanie, what did you find in your reporting about how communities handle these cases and these allegations?
Well, we found from Western Kentucky to Eastern Kentucky and the middle of the state too, that a lot of times victims report and aren't believed, or it's seen as something that everybody's seeing what's going on and they're whispering about it behind their back, like, oh, well, it seems like this child is spending a lot of time with this coach. They're seen riding around town or at Walmart together, or gifts are being exchanged, or they're in the car together, or they're texting a lot, and people have seen those text messages. And that just essentially gets turned a blind eye to, or it turns into just a bunch of gossip instead of, especially when we found out it was happening among teachers in one school district, they're mandatory reporters, and it was never mandatorily reported in a school district. So it's where that open secret kind of idea, where we were wondering, like, what is going on, and why does it seem like this open secret that nobody is actually reporting on?
Ted, who is required to report to the authorities if they know or if they have reasonable cause to believe a child's been sexually abused? And what kind of laws does Kentucky have to really prevent sexual abuse by coaches and teachers?
There's the long list of mandatory reporters, but coaches themselves are mandatory reporters. Anyone in the school system, teachers and administrative staff, medical professionals. If a pediatrician sees a child in the office and that child admits to some sort of inappropriate contact, then the pediatrician is required to report. And it's not just them, they're supposed to report when they have, when they know that it's going on. Any suspected conduct is supposed to be reported so that the authorities can take action and do a proper investigation to see if it's true. And, Kentucky has some, pretty good law. It could be better. But there's certain things that are required now that didn't used to be required, like, two deep leadership. No coach is supposed to be alone with a minor at any point in time. They're not supposed to be given, athletes rides home. They shouldn't be in the locker room alone with an athlete. They shouldn't be at a practice alone with an athlete. There needs to be multiple people in the room, and there's supposed to be extensive training. But my experience is kind of along the lines of what Stephanie pointed out. People see it. People know about it, and it becomes gossip, and nobody decides to take action.
Stephanie, tell us briefly about Jenna Quinn. I know she's from Texas, but she's been pushing for legislation across the country. And it sounds like her real quest started with a simple question from her sister.
Yeah, absolutely. Jenna Quinn is a former athlete, and she was sexually abused by her coach, and she didn't know how to tell anybody about it. She'd never had a conversation that told her about body safety and how to go about appropriately saying it to others. And then her sister asked her one day, has anybody ever hurt you? And she'd been displaying for a couple years at that point, just different signs. And they had taken her to the doctors and run through all of these tests. And when her sister asked her that question, she opened up and talked about the abuse that she'd been facing. And when they, when her parents took her to get an exam done, her mom picked up a pamphlet. And Jenna says that she basically, every single sign of child sex abuse, she was every single bullet point. Mm. And so that caused her to want to be a advocate for it. And she created a model policy, which now has passed in over 38 states. Ohio actually was the 38th state to pass it. And there's a version of the law also called Aaron's Law. So it's Jenna's and Aaron's Law. Aaron's Law is what passed in Ohio, and it requires age-appropriate sex abuse and violence prevention in K through 12 to equip children to speak up during sex abuse and give them the tools and the words to be able to use and to identify who is a safe adult to go say that something is happening.
But that has not passed in Kentucky, is that correct?
It actually, no, it hasn't. And it's been brought before the General Assembly. This will be the 10th year that it is going to be brought forward. It took 7 years in Ohio to pass and 3 visits by Aaron Marin. Jenna and Aaron have both visited Kentucky or talked with lobbyists and legislators. Ohio, it was difficult because of lobbying efforts that occurred around like what the curriculum would be in the classroom. And I've been told that that's actually like the very same reason it's having a hard time passing in Kentucky. And then the other half of that problem in Kentucky is it's seen as an unfunded mandate to put it into schools. But the Archdiocese of Louisville actually has a program and it costs $2.25 a student.
$2.25 a student.
Yes.
Stephanie, there was also House Bill 275, as I understand, that was introduced last session. We're running short on time, but explain briefly what that would have done and what happened to it.
Sure. It would essentially prohibit schools from allowing those confidentiality agreements within settlements to allow if somebody, we found that at least five sex abuse cases involving minors had confidentiality agreements. And it also would prohibit schools like a teacher or a coach from moving from one school district and then the school district not finishing up an investigation if there were child sex abuse allegations. So it actually was refiled by Representative James Tipton yesterday, and it'll be House Bill 36 this session.
And what happened to it last session?
That's a great question. Everybody that I spoke with about the bill said that it ran out of time. And so on the final day of the legislature, you're able to go until midnight, and the legislators went till about 6 o'clock that night. And it just needed a vote of concurrence in the House, meaning that's where it started. They just needed to say, like, after a small tweak, like, yes, we want to pass this. And it never got that bump.
Ted, what kind of reaction do you hear from clients when they see something like that happen, when they see a bill like that run out of time? And I'm asking you this question unfairly because you've only got about 30 seconds to answer it.
I have a lot of clients that call, and when I explain to them the law and why they don't have a path to seek justice, they're very upset and ask, what can we do about it? And, you know, having programs like yours, you know, Stephanie is an award-winning journalist. I think this piece should be an award-winning piece that she's done, and really bringing to light what's going on and pushing the legislature to make these fixes is just something we all have to keep doing.
Well, I've been talking with Enterprise and Investigations reporter for the Courier-Journal, Stephanie Kuzadim, and Thomas Law Office's managing partner, Tad Thomas. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thanks, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.